And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Can't compete with me now, can you? Because I got pit vipers. Flannel color, because that's the best, you already know. For Shake the Mullet, I got them in full turbo mode, because that's what it's at.
Good morning, Sweet World, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Wednesday, June 9th. Almost said 8th. I'm J.E. Skeets, rolling with the homie, Tass Mellis.
Fellow Blue Chewers.
Hello. We got my top shot hot boy, fellow freak, Trey Kirby.
Ayo.
Ayo. Ayo. The international Ayo. Man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friends.
And last but not least, making the magic happen, he's put up our names on the screen so you know who we are. It's JD.
Hello. I actually left them up because I forgot to take them down.
There he is. And here we are. Yeah, I activate those when we do the Top Shot Hot Boys. I throw our Top Shot usernames there in the little lower third. But just in case you don't know who we are, that's who we are. Shout out to the stream team for joining us live on YouTube right now. Smash that like button. Leave your comments and subscribe. Last I checked, we're like 100 subs away. From 40K. Come on, let's do it today, people. We need 100 heroes or so to get us to 40,000 subs. So if you haven't already, subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube and maybe tell a friend to do the same. Keep sending in your questions and your comments for the Beach Steppin' Podcast. You can email them in, nodunks@theathletic.com. You can tweet them in, @NoDunksInc. That's INC on Twitter there. We're going to hit the beach later today. So you can look to join us at approximately 3 p.m. Eastern here on Wednesday. Again, back on YouTube if you want to join us live. And then we'll turn it around and turn it into your podcast form as soon as possible. And finally, go grab your No Dunks merch over at NoDunks.com. Okay, a couple games to break down. And another award was handed out, which we'll get into. But we start with Donovan Mitchell Tass scoring 45 as the Jazz rally past the Clippers here in Game 1 to take the quick series lead. Fun game there in the nightcap.
It was really, really fun, and the Utah Jazz are a real contender. What makes them a real contender and not just a good team that's won a lot of basketball games, like we've seen in the history of the NBA, is Donovan Mitchell. He can take them to another level. 45-er, but that's, you know, not an aberration. It's not an anomaly from what he's done in the postseason. He's averaging 28 points in his playoff career. That's a huge number. That's just behind LeBron James' average, just behind Kevin Durant's average. It's a higher average than Kobe Bryant had in his career. Now, that's not, I'm comparing him to those guys, and I know nobody wants to anoint him one of the best players ever until he actually does it, but he's on the frickin' path. He is absolutely on that path to be a guy that takes over in the playoffs. He feels like no one can stop him at the rim. He feels like he is the best player on the floor. And a huge reason why the Utah Jazz can make it to the NBA Finals and then have to face the Brooklyn Nets, because we know the Brooklyn Nets are going to be there from the Eastern Conference, is that they have home court advantage. You saw in the third quarter, Donovan Mitchell at home take over. A 16-point third quarter when they were down. Home court advantage is real, especially as you get into the second and the third rounds. We saw what happened with Phoenix and Denver in Game 1. This could be the finals team because Donovan Mitchell really does believe in himself, believe it is himself as the number one guy. And, you know, we saw what he did last year in the bubble. Now he has home court advantage to sort of take him over the top. Donovan Mitchell, he's only played in 27 playoff games, only 27, but he's already got 4 40-point games. That's a huge number. And as they were saying on the broadcast with Karl Malone in the building, second all-time in NBA scoring, he's also only got 4 40-point games, and he played in 193 playoff games. So Mitchell, took over in the third. He also doesn't have Serge Ibaka on the other side of the floor. The plan was for the Clippers coming into this season, to have Serge Ibaka as a rim deterrent to be their starter like he was for the 2019 Toronto Raptors as they became champions. And I think he would help with Donovan Mitchell not feeling as comfortable around the rim. But who knows if he's going to be a factor in this series, if he's coming back. But on the other side, the Clippers, I think, just for a few positives going into game two, Kawhi was not himself in this game. He ended with 23 points, a decent number, but he was, he just was passing off. He was hesitant. They didn't know really where they were getting their shots. He has to beat up on Royce O'Neal, who is a really good defender, try and get him out of the game. Quinn Snyder said as much during one of those coaches' interviews. We're just going to try and guard him one-on-one. Finally, a good coaches' interview that actually had some substance right there. And I think we got some good audio. We'll get to that a little bit later. But they almost fouled out Rudy Gobert. That's a great factor, a great sign. But the Rudy Gobert factor was real. I think he was great in stopping the other star for the Clippers. Paul George was 4 of 17 in this game, so positive. Not really, but he did start getting it going at the end. He started 1 of 11, finished 3 of 6. He got that crossover, sidestep, mid-ranger, starting to feel better. So those two guys, I think, will get better as the series went on, just like they did versus the Mavericks in the first round. They learned to deal with Doncic a little bit as the series went on, so maybe they'll get to learning Donovan Mitchell a little bit better. And their role players did come out to play. So I think some positives, but Donovan Mitchell has shown himself to be the best player in this series thus far, and he feels great.
Yeah, if you just look at Donovan Mitchell's last 12 playoff games, so just going back to the bubble in the seven-game series there versus the Nuggets, and then what he's done against the Grizzlies, and then including that game last night, he's averaging nearly 35 points per game on splits like 50, 47, and 93 lately. I mean, he is locked in. And I'm glad Tass brought him up, or starting with him. I mean, he scored 45. It makes sense to start with him. But, like, he does get overlooked in conversations when we talk about, like, sort of young superstar players. He just gets lost in the shuffle. I don't know if that's because he's in Utah. I don't really know what it is. But it does feel like there's many more names that are ahead of him when we have those conversations. And he reminded us, like Tass said, hey, I'm here too. Dwayne Wade's in my corner giving me tips during the game. And he
just did a quick look up. It appears that Donovan Mitchell currently averages more points per game in the playoffs than Dwayne Wade. And that was some, honestly, Dwayne Wade shit last night from Donovan Mitchell. Tass, I think the sound you're talking about was the huddle with Donovan Mitchell where he's saying, these guys played a game 7 2 days ago. If we keep hitting them, they're going to get tired. And that's exactly what happened.
They'll quit if we make them.
And they did. And it was impressive, man. Seeing back, I mean, I guess the Clippers didn't quit. It came down to it, but it was impressive by the Jazz. Really riding the flow of the crowd. The crowd was incredible. Fans are back, baby.
Yeah.
The first round of the playoffs, it was all about asshole fans just ruining things for everybody. The second round of the playoffs, the fans have been super loud. Every game feels like a game 7. And Mitchell, yeah, it was a pretty cool. I mean, it's weird to me to see Dwayne Wade cheering on the Jazz.
I'll be
completely honest, but I do love the relationship between Mitchell and Wade because obviously Donovan Mitchell wants to be the next Dwayne Wade. I don't know why. I mean, they're Marquette guys. They have similar games. Mitchell's been getting Wade comparisons forever. So I don't know that an ownership fractionalized move can have such an impact, but it really feels like it does. Getting that veteran leadership from Dwayne Wade on the sideline saying, hey, man, just take over. Score 32 points and a half. That's what Dwayne Wade would do. It worked.
Yeah, I will say, you know, after Trae Young lit up the Sixers in game 1, and we're going to get to game 2, Lili, you know, we're like sitting here going, why the hell isn't Ben Simmons on Trae Young? Could we not sort of say the same last night, especially in that second half when Mitchell gets it going, like, why isn't Kawhi on him way more? Why is it, you know, and credit to Mitchell and the Jazz for hunting him, but it's the Nard dog. It's Kennard on him a lot of times. It's Batum on him a lot. Now, he was hitting threes in Paul George's eye, and he's a great defender, but like, why not the best defender on the guy that's, like, roasting you right now? Why not? Is that because you're worried you got to ask too much from Kawhi on the other end?
Well, two things. When it was Kennard, Donovan Mitchell didn't have to shoot threes. He's like, I'm just going to the rack.
And he just went layup line.
Walk past him. But Kawhi Leonard, as great as he is, as great defender as he is, we saw it against the Mavs, he doesn't really fight through any of those screens. Mitchell just kind of walked into it, and he took Kennard, and he said, okay, now I'm just going inside. So I think it has to be a little bit more aggression from Kawhi Leonard, because without question, he's the guy, or Paul George, you want on Donovan Mitchell, not Luke Kennard. Luke Kennard gave them something offensively, but the Jazz were basically like, okay, where is he? Okay, great. And then they just went in and scored uncontested. So that's the thing about Donovan Mitchell, the variance in his game. He hit some bombs last night, some Steph Curry-like threes, And then it was like, okay, now I've got a mismatch, so I'm going to take a high percentage look by going in. So that's smart basketball. That's basketball IQ. And the Clippers, I think, you know, really, that first half was a great first half, but I think you started to see them just wear down because I think they did fight until the end. You know, if Kawhi takes that shot on Joe Ingles, who Joe Ingles actually recovered through a screen and got there and just had his arms up. He wasn't really jumping. He wasn't doing anything to do other than just to be there. Then, and that goes in, maybe gets the overtime and maybe the Clips are a chance, but it goes instead to Morris in the corner. And Rudy Gobert, I mean, we, like, on the offensive end, if a guy hits a shot to win the game, it's a game winner. This was a game sealing block, an incredible play, because he kind of got missed. He kind of slipped out of it and then recovered and blocked it anyway. Contesting a 3-point shot, you know, you can easily get a foul. You could potentially even give up a 4-point play. But I thought that was just fantastic recovery there from Rudy Gobert, and he should deserve a lot of credit for that because, yeah, the Clippers went small, thought we have to try to exploit Rudy Gobert, but Rudy wasn't going to be exploited last night, I don't think. I mean, Paul George had a 3-point attempt a little bit earlier than that as well, where he could have driven past him, but he settled for that instead. And I think if they're going to exploit him, they have to bring him out and then drive past him to go inside, not try to shoot over him. So that's what I sort of noticed here from the Clippers. But for the Jazz, you know, this was one of those games that the Clippers probably feel they let slip in what's going to be a very close series. They had this one for long enough, but then the Jazz were just too good in that third quarter. And I think that was a little bit of the freshness really coming into play. Home court, fresh, no Mike Conley, of course, but when you've got a star like Donovan taking over like he did, he just steered the team home. But it was, you know, it came down still to that last possession. So, you know, pretty, the Clippers put up a good enough fight.
Do you think the Clippers will revert back to playing big, Tass, in game two? Will that be a move that Coach Lou makes? Like, will we see more Zubats? Will he continue to go small? I mean, Cousins got a look. And, like, did, you know, played okay.
It's had a nice sequence there for a second.
Yeah, in spot minutes. I mean, will Lou switch anything up and honestly go back to maybe playing a little more big against the Jazz team that has Gobert in the middle? What do you think?
No, I think they mix it up and they stay with Marcus Morris as their center to start. You know, Zubat's got plenty of minutes off the bench, but, you know, it's not just to exploit him defensively, but it works to kind of take him away offensively because they just switch everything. It was exactly what the Warriors did to end the season. They just switched everything in their matchups with Utah during the regular season, and it kind of helps take away Rudy Gobert's offensive game. And he struggled offensively. You know, they could definitely use Mike Conley to help set him up. And Mike Conley's absence was big for sure. But no, I think they start if you go small, you just switch and you have a body in front of Rudy Gobert, and Gobert's going to struggle with that. So I think that's the game plan. But I think they are going to get smarter in the rotations, and Kawhi will take Donovan Mitchell a little bit more, like he started to take Luka Doncic after game one. I mean, they struggled. Maybe they weren't as fresh, but they, Kawhi just, he absolutely was not right. And I don't know if they put this on the bulletin board going into game two, but Donovan Mitchell saying, and the cameras grabbing it and broadcasting it, they'll quit if we make them. I mean, that's something that the Clippers could rally around. Now, are the Clippers the same team as they were last year? Are they just going to fall flat? I don't think so. I think they showed that they could bounce back in round one. They didn't fall apart here in game one. They did fight. But yeah, right now, I mean, the difference really is the superstar. Donovan Mitchell had a superstar game. Kawhi Leonard is supposed to be the best player in this series. He's got to bounce back. This game, as much as you know, we want to talk about the, you know, the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh guy, it's about the stars. I got a haircut recently. A hairdresser said, "Are these Hawks for real?" And part of it is, yeah, sure, they're for real. But Trae Young has to be amazing. I mean, you look at the eight teams left. We've got Booker versus Jokic. We've got Kawhi here versus Donovan Mitchell. We've got Trey versus Embiid. And we've got Durant versus whatever the Bucks are doing over there. You got to have a superstar performance to win this thing. And yeah, I think Kawhi just has to be better.
Yeah, the difference, though, we saw Kawhi do it in the first round. He was amazing. Like, he was the Terminator. We talked about it. He was doing against the Mavericks, who, you know, do not have by any means like a lot of lockdown defenders, even the greatest team defense in the world. Whereas the Jazz, TK, I mean, Royce O'Neal, he did about as good a job as anyone can really do in his minutes against Kawhi and Paul George. Ingles always frustrates those two guys, and he's a big body, and he tries his ass off. Bogdanovich isn't even brutal defensively, I would say, on a guy like Kawhi. Now, Kawhi's always going to get his, but those guys can make it a lot more difficult than I think anything the Mavs could do. So I'm fascinated to see, is it just a little exhaustion here from a seven-game series in the quick turnaround, or is it a little bit more, maybe, whoa, this is a much better defensive team here in the Jazz, individually and then a collective group, because you've got Gobert back there. I thought Favors came in, absolutely changed the game a little bit defensively too. That's going to be the big question mark outside of, like, yeah, you need playoff P here, pandemic P, and then the Terminator to play better and play at least to a closer level to like what Donovan did last night.
Yeah, real quick, another shout out for the Jazz fans. Coming up with the playoff P and the overrated chance, that's how you do it. You don't got to pass out a sheet ahead of the game. Everybody knows these things that you can just come up with on the fly, and it was exciting. I think it's kind of everything, though, Skeets. I do think that the schedule for the Clippers really played a factor in this. You know, since basically last week they've been flying back and forth from California to Texas, Texas to California. Now we're going to Utah. Meanwhile, Kawhi Leonard was carrying the Clippers in their first round series, especially in games 6 and 7. Then you step up in defense, like you're saying. Royce O'Neal did a great job, and I would even factor in Reggie Jackson fouling out in 17 minutes. I think that was a huge thing, just because he's a guy who can move the ball, can make it so that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George can get shots where they're not just kind of facing the Jazz defense, taking them on 1-on-5. That's impossible. The Jazz are the best defensive team in the league for a few consecutive seasons. They want to slow it down and make you have to grind through possessions. So a better Reggie Jackson, a better Kawhi Leonard, and just kind of getting into this series, I think, is going to be big for the Clippers. We will see in game two, because like Tass is saying, you got to have big performances from your stars. I think Kawhi will bounce back. He tends to get stronger as these series go on, and obviously you're going to take him in a matchup over Royce O'Neal over the course of the series. Game one, you know, this should have been a win for the Jazz. They did a great job to ride their fans, to ride their rest, and to come through in the clutch there. But if you're the Clippers, you just need to win one in Utah. That could be game two. It's going to have to be a massive performance from Kawhi.
It wasn't looking good at the start, Lili, for the Jazz and their fans. Missing, what was it? What did it get up to? 21 consecutive shots? And it felt like, you know, 75% of those were three-pointers, and people that were maybe seeing the Jazz play for the first time were confused. Why did the Jazz take so many three-pointers? Well, that's what they do. Didn't they set the all-time record for three-point attempts from a team this season? They start to let it fly with all those shooters. But, yeah, to miss 20-plus shots in a row and still be in the game, that was the big thing. It was a little bit like the Clippers let them off the hook a bit there. And a big part, of course, is the Jazz still have the defense. So it's like, okay, we can miss 20 in a row. Our defense is still going to keep us in games, hopefully. That's what happened there. Like, that it happens against, I don't know, in any other series. I bet it's like a, I don't know, how is it not like a 25-point lead or something like that? But it was never that crazy, right? It was like 7, I believe, at the end of the first quarter, something similar to that. So they were just still there despite not being able to hit a shot.
Was it the Rockets who missed? Oh, well, I guess that was 27 threes they missed, wasn't it, against the Warriors in that game, which cost them in a game 7. But that is the way the Jazz played, and maybe that's a little bit of the rust factor for them, that they just weren't as fresh from the start. But you know they're not going to go away from that strategy, because they can all shoot them. You know, Jordan Clarkson finally, he lit it up and had 6 off the bench. Jingles didn't shoot them all that well, only 1 for 8, but they got contributions from guys, because that's how they play their offense. You saw Bogdanovich with that sort of inbound steal, just step out to a three, hit another one late as well. He's got such a beautiful stroke to him. Like, I'm shocked he ever misses, really. He's just him and Boggy in Atlanta, it's just beautiful to watch. So that's the thing, that the Clippers couldn't exploit it and really drive that advantage home. And once the Jazz started knocking them down, they just got back into the game. And as I said before, Mitchell, I mean, in that third quarter, he was not afraid of, he wasn't letting those pass misses catch up with him. He was still firing away and getting deeper and deeper on them as well. And they were great. But that's the thing with the Clippers. Ty Lue seems to think that they can somehow play Rudy Gobert out of this game and out of this series. I just don't think that's a factor at all. Rudy knows what they're going to try to do. And Quinn Snyder's not going to say, yeah, we can't have Rudy Gobert on the floor right now. And Ty Lue said after the game, about one of the reasons why he didn't call a timeout is he didn't want the Jazz to take Rudy off the floor. That was never, ever going to happen. Quinn Snyder's not going to take Rudy Gobert off the floor unless he's in foul trouble in this series and there's, you know, 10 minutes to go. So I don't see that as a factor at all. I think the Jazz are waiting for that and they're ready for it. Even though, you know, if you can get Rudy on the perimeter, there's an advantage to be taken potentially. But he's not going to be like Enes Kanter, you can't play, sit on the bench.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was talking about that final play where they just brought it up. And they're like, oh, well, if we call timeout, they'll take Rudy off because they want a bunch of... They know we need a three-pointer, yeah. And they're going to want to switch everything. And, you know, again, can you exploit Rudy on the perimeter? Well, I don't think Marcus Morris can by any means. And that was an awesome defensive play. You said it from Ingles, from Royce O'Neal. Like, they blew it up. They just blew up the play. And I was a little surprised that Paul George or Kawhi did not take the three.
Oh, they both passed, yeah.
I know. I mean, I
Kawhi
get it.
Stumbled.
Yeah,
Kawhi.
He stumbled, but he got it back, right? And then
he had, he had clean possession, though, like before Jingles sort of got to him. And then, I mean, Marcus Morris, I think, finished 1 for 9 from the field. I mean, he's a better shooter. He hit 7 threes, I think, in game 7 there, so he can hit it. But if Paul gets it and then Kawhi gets it, one of those guys should be taking that shot.
Yeah, I think Kawhi would have let it rip if he didn't stumble. That kind of allowed Joe Ingles to catch up to him. I think the play was for Kawhi to let it rip as soon as he got it. And it was a good play call to be able to come down without a timeout and to have a little weave. It was a Rondo handoff to Paul George to Kawhi Leonard. But yeah, I think Joe Ingles caught up to him. And Kawhi was definitely a little reluctant in this game. He just wasn't right. So yeah, then the pass to the corner and then... Rudy G came out there. It was a beautiful, beautiful block for Rudy.
Trey, I know you've changed your tune when it comes to this player, but do you enjoy the fact that playoff P / pandemic P goes 4-17 and getting the chance and, you know, Twitter's having some fun with him? Or have you matured in your ways still?
I didn't mind it, man. The guy went to the free throw line 10 times, knocked down 9 of them. He didn't shoot well from the field, but... I mean, yeah, if he shoots better, probably the Clippers win. I didn't really feel like Paul George was the reason that the Clippers blew that last night. I just thought that that was a Jazz win. That was a perfect Jazz win. Even coming down to that last play, obviously Ty Lue should have called a timeout at some point. Maybe not when they get the rebound, but like when Kawhi bobbles the ball. Or even when Marcus Morris gets it in the corner, he's got like 4 seconds, I do think, right? And everybody knows he needs to shoot a three-pointer. Rudy Gobert is one of the tallest guys in the league. He's just standing there like... Yeah. Everybody in the stream team is saying, why didn't Morris just jump into Rudy? Come on, y'all. Come on, y'all. We complain about that all the time, and now you're saying that should be the strategy? No, play it straight. They should have called a timeout. That was a botch by Ty Lue. Obviously, Rudy's not going to come off the court there, but you could have run a real play.
Yeah, I think Rudy did a sort of a little slick job. I think he talked about it after, or maybe it was one of the other Jazz players or Snyder. Like, he sort of like shaded into the paint there when all that like stuff was going on with Ingles and Kawhi and O'Neal and Paul George. And like, he sort of like made it look like, well, I'll go protect the rim. And then, you know, they see him open, Morris, to some extent, but he had already made his way back out and closed out. And then he was all over him and there's nowhere to go. The guy's got the longest wingspan in the league, doesn't he? It's like one of the longest. So yeah, there was no chance. And jumping into him. Like Gobert was also like not lunging at him or anything. He had closed out perfectly. He's like, I'm just going to stand here.
You have to shoot it from here.
Insane shot over
good
me.
Good luck.
Yeah.
I got long arms.
Yeah. And it's not like Morris was on fire in this game too. It was just weird. I mean, You would love to see Kawhi or Paul George still take that shot. They're going to get a better look than what Morris got in the end. And you're right, TK. I mean, I'm sure Ty, if he could have it back, he's going to call a timeout. And you're going to come up with a little more motion and something like that, where maybe you're hitting someone right in the pocket on a pass to a corner or something like that after a little movement. But whatever. Great defense, I think, from the Jazz there. I think overall they played great defense in this game. Maybe it was a little fatigue from the Clips, but they're goddamn good defensive unit. That's without Conley out there too, which is pretty special. Anything to add to this game one, which should be, you know, shape up to be a really fun series? Anything I missed? Anything you guys want to bring up?
I just wanted to see a little more inside-out basketball by the Jazz, and I think that's where Mike Conley would have helped. In that first half where it was a clank, 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 it was crazy that they got up to 20 missed shots. I think if Conley's in there, that doesn't happen. They
probably
play
not,
inside-out. Like they are, they have shot the most threes of any NBA team in the history of the game, but... It's set up from inside-out play. This was outside-in play, and the Clippers are actually lucky that without Conley on the floor, they were just kind of passing around the perimeter, and it was quick one-shot. You know, maybe a little nervousness. Maybe the second round just they just were a little rusty, but inside-out. That's what they got to do. So Conley is a big, big factor for that. You know, he is their best sort of setup man, and then Joe Ingles goes back to the bench and helps him out there. So That could be big for them if Mike Conley comes back. And they're playing every second day here. Mm-hmm. Every single game is every second day. No two-dayer breaks like the Hawks and Sixers are getting.
Yeah, but playing a little catch-up, I guess, out west here with some of these series, with the ones in the east ending a little quicker. That might come into play, you're right, Tass, because a lot of the other ones get at least sometimes those little bit of a longer break. But I don't know, who does that favor here? I mean, they're trying to get Conley back. Mm-hmm. So on one hand, you know, that shortened schedule there for a series, maybe that hurts the Jazz. On the other hand, you know, the Clippers have played a 7-game series and played some battles there against the Mavericks, so maybe that's a plus for the Jazz. We'll see. All right,
I'd just like to clarify one thing. I said Dwayne Wade and Donovan Mitchell both went to Marquette. I'm a liar. Donovan Mitchell went to the University of Louisville, so I will take the L on this one. I'll take another L for doing it backwards. I thought I had it all right. There we go.
You're thinking of Jimmy, right?
Yeah, maybe I was thinking of Jimmy. They all seem to roll together, and you throw Victor Oladipo in the mix as well. He played for Dwayne Wade's college coach. He wanted to be Dwayne Wade as well. You know, these strong guards, man. These guys get to the rim, and I love to see it. Everybody's trying to be a junior Michael Jordan, just like Dwayne Wade.
That's right. I just want to be Dwayne Wade and host my own show coming up called The Cube, where I go in and try and help people, I guess, play weird games to win the money. Is that what the show is?
Yeah, it's like you got to do some sort of task, but maybe you can tap in Dwayne Wade as the guy to complete it
really
for you.
Is Dwayne Wade really good at these weird games? Is that what we're led to believe? Probably.
Yeah, probably. I trust in him. Yeah.
How many things has Dwayne Wade got going on right now? He had his big wine announcement the other day. He's a part owner in the Jazz. He's doing the TV. He's on NBA on TNT, like he's everywhere right now. I mean, he's not a businessman, he's a businessman.
Nailed it. All right, let's take a quick break, guys, to hear from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
All right, back with No Dunks here. Let's talk a little Sixers, Hawks, sad caca. Shake Milton saves the Sixers. Wow, out of nowhere, and beat a monster. Philly evens their series. We're tied at one game apiece as we head back to the fortress here with Lee Ellis trying to find tickets for Game 3 in a hurry. But TK, take away from the Sixers' Game 2 victory here.
Love a good random role player playoff game. Yeah. Love it. We've already had a few in the playoffs so far. Had two Bryn Forbes games, basically. We had an Austin Rivers game, and you said it there, Skeets. This one last night was the Shake Milton game. Shake what your Milton gave ya! The man was out of the rotation, not much time against the Wizards, but the Sixers bench was struggling in the first half. 0 points. Mm-hmm. After halftime, Doc Rivers goes to the drive-thru and says, "Give me a shake." Milton checks in and immediately hits a three, puts the Sixers up in the third quarter. Crowd gets into it, a little bit of juice, a little bit of life after things had kind of been tilting the Hawks' way. Then Shake Milton hit what I think was the biggest shot of the night. A 36-foot buzzer beater at the end of the third quarter turned a 4-point lead with the Hawks threatening into a 7-point lead, and the Philly fans were going crazy. A huge momentum shot kept it rolling into the fourth quarter. First possession of the fourth quarter for the Sixers. Shake finds Dwight for an alley-oop. The crowd's going nuts. Shake hits a jumper the next possession down. Suddenly, it's an 11-point lead for the Sixers. With 10 minutes left, Shake hits another three, and it's an 18-point game. in 5 minutes of playing time for Shake Milton. It was wild, man. 14 points in 14 minutes, four threes, a plus 15. We talk about it all the time. So-and-so can win you a quarter in the playoffs. Yep. So-and-so can win you a game in the playoffs. Shake Milton did it for the Sixers. They could have easily been down 0-2. Now they got a little bit of momentum heading into game three. Awesome stuff for Shake Milton.
Yeah, it was crazy. Now I saw AU get off my gold. Andrew Unterberger, obviously a diehard Sixers fan. I don't know if you saw it on Twitter too, Trey. He was like, we're not calling this the Shake Milton game. We need to call it something else. Because his point is, Shake Milton had like that 39-point game, if you remember that, where he hit a bunch of threes, Lee, against the Clippers a couple of years ago. And then, you know, he also had a game winner too. I guess that's not
so
the Shake
so
Milton
what you're
game.
Saying is this is the Shake Milton game, since those ones are not memorable. This one's
well,
in the
they're
playoffs.
Memorable to Sixers fans, I guess. Hey, look, I'm agreeing with you. This is how
that's
I'm
the Shake
gonna remember
Milton
game
too.
Yeah, this is a you know, double shake. I don't know, extra thick, this shake, something like that. There's gotta be something there lately. But it was crazy. I mean, Doc is like Trey said, is like, nobody's doing anything off our bench. We suck. Can anybody mix this up? And Shake Milton had been pretty bad. He'd shot 4-19 in the playoffs so far, and then explodes and you know, took over at the end of the third quarter into the fourth as Philly pulled away. And there's a lot more to dissect from this game, but it does start with Shake there.
It does, because the Hawks got a lead in the third quarter that looked unlikely after the start, because it was the Tobias Harris game at the start. He was just everywhere. Finished with only 22 points, which is kind of shocking. I mean, when you combine his start and Shake's finish there, those two were certainly the stars. Of course, Joel Embiid, his 40 points kind of gets, you know, a little bit lost in the shuffle just because of those two other performances here. But this one, the Hawks looked rattled. And I think a part of it was the way they started the Sixers with Ben Simmons on Trae Young. It just disrupted their offense. They couldn't get anything really going, because that's what Trae has done against the Knicks. And he did in game one, where it was like he has, you know, like those quarters where it's like 15 points and five assists to start things out. But this wasn't the case. In fact, the Hawks couldn't even get anything going. And then they fought back through a little bit of an unlikely source themselves. And Danilo Gallinari, he lit up, had a coast-to-coast dunk in this game, which was just wild to see. It was a bit like a Kyle Anderson slow-mo there.
Yeah.
But the Hawks, I thought, got themselves into a really good position there. Kevin Huerta, love saying that name. He, once again, was really important. He came out pretty early in this one because Solomon Hill didn't do all that much to start the game. And I wonder if that's a move that Nate McMillan considers for Game 3, just starting Kevin Huerta, because he's big enough. And Solomon Hill wasn't really giving them anything out there. But you saw the big change there, of course. You know, Simmons starting on Trae Young. And I think the Hawks were like, well, Boggy, if Danny Green's on you, we're going to go to try to find you, get you some baskets. Yeah. He couldn't knock those ones down early on. So this one, another fun game, but it really basically did turn at the end of that third quarter and the start of the fourth, where Doc Rivers was a break open in case of emergency situation, and he got lucky there with Shake Milton, who just lit it up. So that's all it can be sometimes. You know, in a playoff game, it can be a 5 or 6 minute period where the other team opens it up. Dwight then had a dunk, and I think, you know, he was happy to get out there and get some minutes as well. But, you know, this is going to be a fun series now, because the emphasis now, as the Hawks come away still with a victory, getting the split and stealing home court advantage, how do they now mix things up for Game 3 to try to get Trae going a little bit early on? Because even those shots that he took when he did get some were rushed or deeper than even he likes to take them. And just a way better defensive effort from the Sixers on Trae, trying to sort of stagnate him a little bit, and in turn the Hawks offense early on.
Yeah, Tess, how are Hawks fans feeling here, you think? You know, they did fight back from 18 down. It was not looking pretty there early. It looked like this could be a 30-point blowout like we had saw the night before with Nets-Bucks. And instead, they took the lead at one point and found some things that were working and sort of survived that avalanche, that wave there from the Sixers early, and gave themselves a chance until, of course, Shake Milton popped up. But they got the split here in Philly. Are they feeling good, or are they worried because, like, my God, we can't slow Embiid? That's 39 in game one, which we somehow won, the Hawks did. And then, of course, 40-13 last night. And, you know, maybe you got Tobias Harris, like, showing off his size a little bit early. They went at Trae Young in transition right away in this game, too. Like, I don't know, where's Nate McMillan and the Hawks feeling after the split in Philly, but, you know, this loss last night where they were in it?
Well, they got to be positive. They got to be a little reluctantly positive, I think. Not overly positive. They need to take both games at home, I think, to make this a true series. They can't go back tied at two to Philly. They have to be worried about Joel Embiid, obviously. Yeah, because I thought he's going to wear down at some point he does have a very, very slight meniscus tear. But he's not stopping. And so if Philly is feeling good as they should, it's worrisome for the Hawks, no doubt. But yeah, throw Kevin Huerter in the starting lineup instead of Solomon Hill. And, you can hope DeAndre Hunter comes back, but they have to start better. And the fact that they came back in that third quarter, they can get shots on this defense. They can stretch out Danny Green. Danny Green is slowly chugging along there on the perimeter, and he is unable to find guys. But the Hawks got to be so, so positive about having both Trae Young and Bogdan Bogdanovic out there. You know, one of those guys can get off because Danny Green is going to be trailing them, or Seth Curry is going to be running after them. You know, they can pick their poison as they did at the beginning of this game. It didn't work out to start, but now they know it's coming. And Bogdan Bogdanovic not scared of the moment, as is Trae Young. So I think they should feel, just a little reluctantly positive.
Okay.
So I think they, other than the fact that this is the NBA TV series of the second round, they should be happy. There is no NBA TV series in the second round, but this series is going on Friday and going on Monday. They don't even get a weekend game. they're just chucking it out there. But still, those tickets are really expensive, eh, Lee? Though this is an NBA TV series.
Don't worry. I'm working on something here. But
what are you working on?
Well,
they're going to be pricey.
Yeah, we'll get the standing room ones. We'll get the standing room. They haven't gone on sale yet. Yeah,
I don't know, man.
Well, you're not even buying a seat, eh? You're just going to stand
it's
there.
It's better. You feel like you're one of the boys when you're standing. That's what the real fans do, you know?
All right. I'm in, man. You keep an eye on the books. Are not for sale yet for Friday night? The boys out at the fortress having a pop standing around?
What's better than that, eh? What's better than that?
Jeez.
Guys being dudes.
Yeah. I mean, we're still probably looking at, 150 for those bad boys. Is that how high those? You said
it's weird. So the Friday night I went standing room, they were 114. But then the Sunday standing room, they're only $50. So I know. I thought the weekend would be during like a matinee game would be more expensive, but they're not. So who knows?
Okay.
We'll find out though.
Oh, they're going up. Second round price gone up. I don't know. I think at least $1.50, probably closer to $2.
Let's talk for standing.
I don't think for standing.
Crazy, man.
You get your own little spot. They draw out your shoes, and you have to stand right in that spot.
Oh, look, there's a bit of jostling,
Lisa,
for sure.
They draw your shoes.
Yeah, you've got to hold your ground, for sure. No doubt about it. You get there early, so you hold it. But
do you guys want to link arms when we get there?
Yeah, we might have
Red Rover?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good nickname for Kevin Huerta, Red Rover. Yeah.
But it is 1-1, you're right. Reluctantly sort of positive. I like how you put that, Tass, going back to Atlanta here. I am still dumbfounded. I hate to go back to it, but I am dumbfounded by Doc's decision to not start this series off by putting one of the NBA's best perimeter defenders on Trae Young right from the jump. I was like trying to think of a single good reason why, and there's nothing that I could come up with. Because like, okay, here would be a reason why. Trae Young, oh, he's been struggling in the playoffs. Well, no. He was averaging like 30 points per game versus the Knicks. Became like the ultimate villain in Madison Square Garden. He turned into Reggie Miller. So that's not a good reason. Maybe you're worried about tiring Ben Simmons out. You know, like Kawhi, you can understand. Like, ooh, we put him on the best player in Donovan Mitchell. We also need a good 30, 35 from him. He might get too tired. Well, it's Ben Simmons. He's not leading your offense by any means in terms of like scoring 20 to 30 points. He's 24 years old. He's a physical freak. I think that's okay. That's not a good reason. Maybe you have a better option, an equal option. Matisse Thybulle, okay, maybe, but you started Danny Green on him. I just like, I'm still like, just absolutely dumbfounded by that decision. But it was good to see in game two. Yeah, just put Ben Simmons on him. And it worked. It's not as easy for Trae Young to obviously get by him, to have a little more space. It's just like, make life more difficult for him. So that was good. And, at least the Hawks do have this 1-1 split. And it's a best of five now. I thought Seth Curry, too, was pretty big for the Sixers in the first half, especially Lee. I think he went 4-for-4. From three, and you just need some shooting out there with Embiid. That's that's always been big with this team.
Yeah, I think he finished 21 points, 5 or 6 from downtown. It's funny, he's a better shooter from three than he is from two. I mean, like, it's got the genes, of course, in the family there. But he missed a lot of those shots inside that you're like, he should be able to hit those ones in. But the only problem is with him, I think Doc sometimes has to pull him off because he needs the defensive matchup out there, and I think that's a part of the reason. But when the ball comes to him in any sort of position now on the three-point line, it's like, I'm shocked when it doesn't go in. He's just, he's really improved his game to that point where he's just such an incredible knockdown shooter. And it happened twice there last night. One of the times where it came just off, I think it might have been an Embiid miss, and it just bounced out to Seth. And he stepped in and knocked it down. And, you know, he's been a great pickup for them. Well done to Daryl Morey, just sort of plucking him away from the Mavericks. Or was it Blazers? No, Mavericks.
Yeah, Mavericks. They could have used him a lot.
They could have used
him.
Yeah,
shooting, no doubt. I saw Jason Maples tweet last night, too, just going back to Matisse Thybulle, who played great, I thought, too. And we know he's a great defensive guy. He said, quote, Matisse is 36% three-point shooting away from generational wealth. He is something else defensively. I just thought that was a great tweet. Like, Matisse Thybulle, just work on your three-point shot. That's all you got to do during the summer. Just become like an average, a tiny bit above average three-point shooter. And my God, you are going to make a lot of money in this league because he's so awesome defensively.
San Antonio Danny Green was. That's really what he was, you know, three-point shooter and a better defender. But of course,
he's even a better defender than Danny Green ever was.
Yeah, he is. But that's the thing with Danny Green is he just moves so slowly out there. And that's where the Hawks are like, all right. Oh, he does. I mean, like he's been a very good professional throughout his career. You know, really understood what his role is because remember I think he had the most threes in a finals for five games there with the Spurs, picked up a championship with the Raptors, always found himself in the right spot at the right time. But you can't just look at him out there on the floor now and not just think he's the weakness of that starting unit. And again, I think Bogdanovich and the Hawks are like, Trey, we expect Ben Simmons on you. So, Bogey, you're the one who's going to have to make him work a little bit here. And he did. He could have put him again a little bit under a little bit more pressure, I thought. But anyway, great series. Fun series. Yeah.
They got to change Danny Green's name now. Now that he's old, it's a Dan Green. Can't be Danny
Dan Green.
Green. Anymore.
Danny's
he's almost
a young
34.
Man's name.
Yeah, that's a little whippersnapper name. He doesn't have the foot speed anymore. So they're trying to stretch him out. I love the dance between Trae Young and Ben Simmons, though. Ben Simmons isn't going to foul Trae Young. Trae Young wants to be fouled over and over and over again. And that's why the reason behind Doc Rivers not starting him on Trae in game one was him worrying about fouls. I disagree with the reasoning. It's not smart. But Ben Simmons, you can see. We know that Trae is going to, you know, do his little floppity flops. He's going to get into your body and then flop off and get some foul calls. But Ben Simmons, you'd think, would be all over Trae, but he's giving him plenty of space because he knows that even going around a screen, he gives him, you know, a little bit of a foot, and he knows that he can trail and catch up with that length, and he's not going to get caught on these Trae little maneuvers. He's being smart, giving him just enough space. And then Thybulle comes in, who Doc Rivers called the Lou Williams of defense, you know, in round one. Yeah. And now he's facing Lou Williams on the other side. I don't know if that was a mind game looking forward to round two. But, Lou Williams, he was all right. Trae was rattled a bit. He'll find his flow. Yeah, he was taking long bombers, and he wasn't really slowing down, you know, into his pace. But they got to take game three and game four. I don't know what you guys think, but I just can't see them going back 2-2 and sneaking a win in Philadelphia to win this series. I'm thinking big picture. I want them to win this series. But, if they go back 2-2 with Philly having two games out of three. Anyway, hope to get game three.
Can't have Embiid outplay the entire front court. No. That was pretty tough. I think 18 points from Capella, John Collins, and Solomon Hill last night. And obviously, Embiid had 40. The guy is locked in right now. There was that time when Capella got a dunk on him, and then they just gave the ball to Embiid the next time down, and he sent Capella back to Atlanta before dunking on him. That was pretty impressive. Embiid is unstoppable in this series. So if I'm the Sixers, I'm actually loving how bad Danny Green is playing right now, because that's one of the keys. Your fans have to turn on Danny Green before he starts showing up in the playoffs. You have to think he's going to blow it for you before he comes through in the clutch. They're going to start doubling Embiid hardcore because Capella has no chance against Embiid. Embiid is looking like he's 100% right now, so they're going to have to do something to get other guys taking shots. That's going to end up with Danny Green wide open in the corner. He makes them a lot in the playoffs. He hasn't thus far, but I would have a little confidence he knocks one down when it really matters.
I will say, too, off of Embiid's monster game, this narrative that I saw a couple times last night and this morning with Jokic winning MVP and people trying to somehow compare Embiid's monster game as like a revenge game and like hearkening back to the 95 series where was it 95, 96, where David Robinson gets MVP and then Hakeem goes off and like torches him in that game one and in that series completely. What? Just because Doc Rivers was on that Spurs team and now he's on the other? Well, come on. Come on. I mean, I get it. You're searching for something. It's fun. And I love these guys who are writing some of these narratives too. I think it was McMenamin. I think I saw our man Dan Devine like sneaking into a great Ringer article about him beating the Sixers. But it's like, what are we doing here? This thing, there's nothing alike at all. At all. They're not even going against each other. If we get Embiid versus Jokic in the finals, sure. All right. Then it makes some sense. Not Embiid going for 40 and 13 on Capella on the same night Jokic gets MVP, and just because Doc Rivers is somehow involved in both teams. That's a stretch, in my opinion, Tass.
Well, yeah. But listen, Adam Silver, you know, he likes to build these things up, so maybe he was like, listen, if we give it to Jokic and Embiid needs a win, maybe that's where we can spark.
Okay, sure, sure.
I thought the worst double techs of all time were called two last night on Gallinari gets whacked in the face and then pushed. And he gets a tech foul for that, you know, because Embiid sort of like bumped into him.
What was Embiid like? He only did that to fire himself and the crowd up. I'm 100% convinced. Like, was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I'm with you. Gallinari did nothing.
No. And you know, they went to review it, and I was like, surely, because it looked like, so Scott Foster gave him both tees, and it looked like Embiid, you know, yelled or said something, and it looked like Foster was about to give him another one, and I was like, you can't throw the man out for this. No way. And the push, if I'm Nate McMillan, I'm like going to leak. Gallinari's not going to, you know, he's not a danger to get suspended or anything, but it's like, how can that guy get a tech foul for that? What did he do wrong? They got up and they sort of like bumped shoulders, and then he got pushed. And that was it. So, I mean, come on. It's a playoffs.
I think Embiid purposely bumped shoulders.
Yeah, so did I. That's what I mean.
Purposely created contact between Gallinari and then went back like he was pissed off with the push.
Yeah.
Which is I still don't know why. I think he just does it to, like, get himself going, get the crowd going insane. I'm, like, convinced. But it's a fine line. You're right, Lee. You know, like, someone else runs in and pushes him, and then he does something you shouldn't do, and then suddenly you are tossed, and you're obviously the best player in this series, and you would kill your team's
chances. But also just being on that warning for the rest of the game too is just just unnecessary, because then, you know, Embiid could get tangled up easily with someone in a very minor incident, get another double T, and he's gone, and that's not what we want in this series at all. We want to see, you know, apart from DeAndre Hunter, of course, everyone out there healthy, playing well, and this has been a great series, and that's what we want to see. We don't want anything decided by a needless tech foul where someone gets ejected possibly for it.
Yeah, but again, he did that. He created that tech foul. That one you can't tell me Embiid didn't deserve.
No, well,
he did.
Really? You think he did?
Well, in today's game, yeah, he bumped shoulders with the guy purposely, right? Then went and pushed him. But and I'm sure he's talking up shit.
The push was he almost couldn't even reach him. I mean, that's where
but
it's
but
like...
But why? Why did he do it? I mean, it's pretty unnecessary. Yeah, couldn't you agree?
Unnecessary, yes. But surely the refs can look at that and go, we're certainly not giving Gallinari a tech.
That part I agree with. I don't think
this
the
is a nice long conversation about these two techs. The only thing that can make it better is getting Jason Phillips in here from the NBA front office.
Bring him in,
referee Jason Phillips. Where's Monty McCutcheon when you need him?
Oh, man.
But, no, I mean, you're right. It's pointless in the end because he continued to play and dominate. But your point's taken, Lee. Like, I think it was just dumb on Embiid's part.
Dumb, yeah.
Because he plays later in this game and he gets caught up with Capella and a couple elbows go a little too high, and then it's another double tech. It's like, oh, you already got one. You're gone.
Yeah.
That's brutal. That's dumb. Yes. But, you know, he was fine.
I'll complain about something, too. Did you see Kawhi Leonard get called for a free throw lane violation?
Yeah.
What the was that? You don't give a point to another team because a guy leans in on a free throw from the side. I mean, that was pointless.
Well, if you do that, then you almost have to do it every single free throw, just about. Yeah, someone's doing something.
Oh, you know what they don't care about anymore, too, I've noticed? When someone's shooting a technical foul, and you know how you're supposed to stay outside the three-point line?
Yeah.
I think it was in the Jazz game, too. There was one moment, because it was when they got heated there a little bit. I think it was someone.
Mark Morris.
What's that?
I think it was Marcus Morris. Don't call me Mark Morris.
Yeah.
Morris. We got to tackle Mark Morris.
Okay, yeah. So Bogdanović, though, is like 3 feet in the three-point line when someone's like shooting the free throw. It's like, all right, we don't care about this anymore. You're not supposed to be that close.
I know. But then we get
a lane violation. It's very weird.
Yeah.
We had a 3 second violation last night too. My God. Officials all over it. All right. Let's take one more break before we talk about MVP Jokic. Quick break here from our sponsors.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
I can't wait for happy hour on Thursday night. Oh, man. Oh, excellent. Good stuff. You looked it up lately.
I did. It's a bit longer than I remember it was. I didn't want to put the whole thing in there.
Iconic scene.
Yeah.
I would love to see a young Lee Ellis in that bar in Cocktail, in that neon bar there, dancing to, I don't know. Who would you be dancing to?
What, in the late 80s? That would probably be a little bit of
George Michael,
Aruba.
Maybe.
Jamaica, the what was that song?
Beach Kokomo. Boys, Boys, Kokomo, yeah, in the
Kokomo.
Club.
Kokomo was huge.
Turn up that Beach Boys.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I wasn't going to clubs when I was 13, but I mean, we had those discos, you know, the old parent supervised discos. It must have been on during that. So, yeah.
Didn't you have a story recently about dancing until the early morning in a Russian dance club?
Yeah.
Are we led to believe that they were playing Kokomo by the Beach Boys when you're going wild?
The funny thing is, that was actually London Beat. I've been thinking about you. But the funny thing was, in Pskov, it was 2004. 2005, but it felt like I was in the late 80s because all the bangers were from the sort of late 80s, early 90s. So there's a good chance Kokomo was on.
Shout out to
John Stamos out there. He was a drummer in that one, wasn't he? He was a big fan, a big friend of the Beach Boys.
He's one of the boys, basically.
Yeah. Hang on, just wait. One sec. I got a little something here, but
are you finding a photo or a song?
Yeah, I've got a photo. Where is it? It's going to take a while here. Oopsie.
Don't worry, crap it out.
Yeah, take
your time. You're lagging, bud.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, no. We may have lost JD. Actually. That's what happened.
Good. Perfect, yeah, timing. Perfect timing. Perfect timing.
Great, you broke it, JD. What were you finding?
I've got a photo.
Still finding it.
I've got it here. Oh, where is it?
In Kokomo?
Why do you do this? Why don't you just like let me continue with the show and then we circle back to it? I don't get this. Like, hold on, one sec, because it's not 1 sec.
Wait for it.
Just left.
Yeah, there he is.
Oh, Jesus, Murphy. Yeah. Scanned with Camp Scanner.
Who is this guy?
That's our neighbor, actually, Ronnie. You're from Sunbury, all the way over to London. He came home for a family holiday, so I let him slip behind the bar there while I poured him a beer. There you go. That was worth it, wasn't it?
For sure.
Totally.
If I could hear Kokomo play to the background, I would have enjoyed it. I love me a good Kokomo.
I had to show us a photo of you with an old guy holding a beer.
Hold on. Let me find this picture of an old guy.
Just showing that I used to be a barman back in the day.
No, we know that.
Pretty quick. I was quick to scan that with Cam Scanner and get it up. Nice.
That was impressive, that part. All right, guys. We had some big news there. Yesterday, sort of already talked about it. It's what inspired Joel Embiid to go for 40 and 13. Nuggets big man, Nikola Jokic, officially named 2020-21 Most Valuable Player, became the first player in franchise history to win MVP, led the Nuggets to a 47-25 overall record, averaged 26.4 points per game, 10.8 rebounds, and 8.3 assists. Unbelievable numbers. Three-time All-Star, beat out fellow finalists Joel Embiid and Steph Curry for that honor. He had 971 total points, including 91 first place votes. Lee, not a surprise that he won it, but were you shocked by who got second, who got votes? I'll throw up the actual MVP breakdown, but okay, yeah. I was about to use somebody else.
Yeah.
It's fine.
No, not a shock that he won it, of course. I think he was the favorite there for the last couple of months, and really happy that he did. He, it was a convincing victory and a well-deserving one. He's been fantastic this season. There was some votes spread out there. Joel Embiid only getting one first-place vote was a bit of a surprise, considering Steph got five, Giannis himself got one, and then Chris Paul also picked up two, and Derek Rose, people talk about that. That was the fan vote that got him a
That was the fan vote that no one knew about, apparently.
No, I know. That's funny you say that, because I was like, I didn't know they were even doing that this year, but it does just prove Derek Rose has got some incredible loyal fans out there. Like, his stands are, like, crazy, man.
Prove that. It might also prove this was buried on the NBA.com site so deep that, like, one Derek Rose fan found this thing and clicked on Derek Rose. Might just be one person. But you're probably right. There is a lot of D-Rose fans out there.
You know, so let's start with Jokic. Deserving, an incredible play, an incredible talent, does so much for his team on both ends of the floor, and I'm so happy that he's able to win it, because he's certainly, when you look at him, he's not the most sort of athletic looking guy out there, but he's very, very talented and plays the game with such an incredible high IQ. His passes are amazing. His ability to score in so many different ways is incredible. And he really does carry his team. So very happy for him and for the Denver Nuggets. The first ever in franchise history. And just a great, great moment for Nikola Jokic and his family. 3 years in a row now we've had a non-US born MVP. Obviously, Giannis won two in a row there. But that also just shows, again, it's such a global game. Such a global game. And you're seeing versatile, different players win this. And I think that's great for the league and great for basketball.
And pretty incredible, Trey, that this is a guy that was drafted 41st overall. I mean, this is a deep sort of second round pick, and he turns into what took 6 years to be a runaway MVP runner. Oh, winner, excuse me.
Yeah, the vote wasn't even close in the end, as expected, because the entire season it felt like we were comparing Jokic to anybody else, and nobody really stood the test of time over the entire season. Lowest drafted MVP ever, and as you saw going around on Twitter last night, when Nikola Jokic was actually drafted, there was a Taco Bell commercial on ESPN. Pretty incredible stuff. Was it for a quesarito, perhaps? Something like that? Yeah. I don't even think they have the product that they were selling at Taco Bell anymore, but the Nuggets have Nikola Jokic, and somebody in the stream team suggested, is Nikola Jokic the best Nugget already?
Of all time.
First MVP.
I guess it's Alex English. Carmelo.
Carmelo, yep. Yeah, that's actually going to be interesting at the end of both his career and Melo's career, because, I don't know, we've talked about it before. Will Melo have his jersey retired by the Nuggets? He wore 15 for the Nuggets.
Yeah.
So does Nikola Jokic, who now has an MVP and is still just getting started with Denver. I was happy to see that Jokic got it. Nobody was surprised. And apparently Shaq told him, because of you, the big man is back. Love to hear that. First center to win MVP since Shaq. Unless you're counting Giannis, who won it the past 2 years, and, who is seven feet tall and, you know, 285 pounds of pure muscle.
Yeah, and then even if you want to play the old Tim Duncan game there, too, winning a couple after Shaq, but pretty close.
Nonetheless.
You know, the big man is back, though. Embiid coming second, too, Tass. 1-2 is pretty rare for the giant guys of this league. Anything to add to this with Jokic officially getting what we expected for at least the last couple months?
Yeah, just back to Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan entered the sphere a couple ways. Yeah, I always looked at it as, Tim Duncan slash Kevin Garnett were the last guys, big guys to win it. Also, the international route, Tim Duncan entered that conversation because there was a graphic that went up. Steve Nash, Hakeem Olajuwon, Yaz Tetekupo, Dirk Nowitzki, and Tim Duncan, the international winners. But come on, Tim Duncan, come on. He played for USA Basketball. I just loved his head coach, Michael Malone, wearing this shirt. Was badass, I thought. For a coach, staying young, staying hip, to be wearing a shirt that had all the things that Jokic has been wrongfully assigned all the labels: too skinny, can't jump, slow, flapper, the kid from Denver, that's an interesting one, poor defender, 41st pick, bad attitude, slow feet. So he's obviously got coach in his corner. I thought that was pretty neat by
too
by
Mr. skinny
Michael. I was gonna say, I've never heard real that early.
Let me get that back up. Too skinny. Yeah, that was weird.
I guess that maybe this is they're throwing shots at Lee Ellis, who after Jokic got in shape before the bubble last year, said I don't know if he's going to be good now that he's in incredible shape, took the Nuggets to the Western Conference Finals, and then won the MVP. So, too skinny, I guess.
What do you think about how he got the award? Like, in the, team meeting, they're watching the big screen, and here comes Adam Silver, and just how it was awarded to Jokic, the news that he had won MVP. Loved
not,
it.
Not the most.
No, yeah, not, I thought it was a little. Eh.
Yeah,
because the other one's been so great too. This one, even the camera angles that we were seeing, I was like, I can't even see him, man. What's he doing?
You saw him at one point with his phone talking to his family, and he was like, best part of it. But a little surprised they didn't seem to put some more thought behind it. But maybe they spoke to the Nuggets, and the Nuggets were just like, let's just do it, at the end of practice or film session or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, who knows?
Some of the other ones had been a little more unique in terms of awarding the guys, surprising them, whatever it was. Whatever.
I hate seeing stuff in like a ballroom, that looks like a hotel conference room. Yeah, it just kills the vibe.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Right. I guess there's been good ones in hotel conference rooms, though. Like KD feels like it was, it was just a presser, but that was all KD's speech. Yeah, you the real MVP. But
Yeah, that's the press conference. That's a good point. Let's just go back to right before the game, in front of your home crowd, bring them out there, hand it to them. I guess they don't want that anymore, maybe because of what Hakeem did to David Robinson. I don't know. Maybe he ruined that. But congrats to Jokic, to all his fans. I mean, a big part of it was he played all 72 games. That's amazing for a guy his size and the load that he has to carry, especially offensively. I think he was one of just 11 players in this really weird pandemic year to play all 72 games. And I don't think that's the only reason he won this. Don't get me wrong. But that helped his case over your Embiids, over your Currys, over a lot of guys that just ultimately missed time. That's fine. That's an incredible thing to do, to play that many games and to put up still one of the best statistical seasons in NBA history. And pretty, pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah. So, I think that's why Lillard picked him. Damian Lillard was vocal in saying Jokic should be the guy. Because I think a lot of players, that playing every game was, it deserved a little bit higher level of respect this season. I think everybody understood, crunched season, playing more games. Yeah, it should be valued a little bit more, even if he's too skinny or too fat or whatever people call him. I don't know. He's just awesome. That's what he is. And he should be friggin' respected for it.
Let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter. Yes, well, we talked about it, and it is that tweet that came in from last night. A few people had, but I got them from the Hurry Up NBA saying that Nikola Jokic got drafted during a Taco Bell commercial. There he is at the bottom there. Power forward from Serbia.
Congrats. Oh, wow. Look at this thing.
Yeah, what is that?
Wow. The quesarito.
Yeah.
Man, look at the cheese pull on that thing.
Yeah. So he certainly didn't blast his way onto the scene there. It wasn't like, wow, this guy could win MVP in 7 years' time. Instead, it was just a taco or a quesarito. So.
Yeah, that's not just a taco, man. That's like three layers. But I could hear the theme song in this commercial being Bermuda, Bahama, ooh, I want to take mama. For a quesarito.
Oh, man. Too, this is full circle, too. A Taco Bell commercial while Jokic is getting drafted. Last big man to actually win it, like we said, official center big man, Shaquille O'Neal. He was going to have a Taco Bell one-on-one game with Hakeem Olajuwon.
Ah, wow.
Who spanked David Robinson after he won MVP and Embiid going off. This is, it's all connected, man. Oh, I feel like that meme, Charlie Day meme, where I'm looking at the board, yeah.
Trey's nickname is Taco Trey Kirby. He is the biggest Nikola Jokic supporter.
Same birthday?
As the Joker?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I guess that's the key, man. If you're watching the NBA draft, it's coming up here. Pay attention to the Taco Bell commercials because they've got a deep tie-in to NBA centers. If somebody over 7 foot gets drafted during a Taco Bell commercial, great things are in store.
Are you going to bet on Taco Fall to win MVP next season? He's a big guy. That's a super big guy.
That's exactly right. Who am I? Mike Breen? Taco Bell? Yeah. Taco Fall? Most improved. Let's call him most improved for next year.
What was that Burger King sandwich that they advertised during the game? It was just a random... Quesarito reminded me that there's a new BK Ching. It's like a Ching or something. I don't know. Like, I just like...
Chiking or something? Like, I don't know.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think Chiking.
What? I don't know what that one was, but the other one there that's been advertised a lot is like... It's a taco, but the taco is a piece of fried chicken. Like, it's a fried chicken shell. I mean, Taco Bell always pushing the envelope. Oh, yeah. But that's an exciting one. That's a little scary. A little scary.
I can't believe I don't know really what you're talking about, Tass, because I should, because all we watch is the same 12 commercials over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, this one, you're right. This one was in-game. Lower third ad, read by Kevin Harlan.
Yeah,
Chiking. Okay, that's why I don't
yeah,
know the one
it's a Chiking
commercial. Okay,
they're trying to copy the chick with a big chicken sandwich. The Chiking. Oh, now I get it. It's a chicken sandwich.
Burger King. Yeah. All right, tonight's game: cool. Nuggets. I could use some of those right now. Now, after all this food talk, versus the Suns. Game two. What's one thing to watch for? Let's make this quick, Trey.
Jokic doesn't have two bad games in a row. Had a one assist game, game one against Portland, followed that up with 38, 8, and 5. In game four, 16 points for Jokic. He got called out for being soft by Michael Malone postgame, followed that up with probably his best game in the playoffs so far, 38, 11, and 9. Had a subpar game one, no doubt. Played to a draw by DeAndre Ayton. Ayton was phenomenal in game one, but if the Nuggets want to win this series, Jokic has to win that matchup against DeAndre Ayton. One win in Phoenix is a success for the Nuggets, so I'm looking for an MVP monster-type game from Nikola Jokic tonight.
Lee, I'm going to put you on the spot, but give me a player from tonight's game, either team, that could have a Shake Milton-like performance.
Does Mikal Bridges count? Or not really, I mean.
Yeah, I'll take it. Sure. Yeah. So you got Bridges having another good game. Back-to-back, because he was awesome in game one.
He's been good for them so many times this season. Fun to watch. I think he does get a chance as well to open up with those three-pointers because, you know, Booker and Chris Paul are going to be defending him. So Bridges just in the corner there can knock him down. Give me Bridges for 6-3 balls.
Ooh, Tass, you got a prediction for tonight's only game on? One game. We get to focus solely on Nuggets Suns. What's it? You got a prediction for tonight's game?
Well, it's definitely the matchup I'll be watching as DeAndre Ayton trying to guard Nikola Jokic, who was so good guarding him in the first game, just never got sped up on defense. I know we talk about being sped up on offense, but Jokic finds a way to get guys in the air or out of position or puts them in the basket. But Ayton was just so solid, like he has been whenever he's guarded Jokic. Does that continue? Can they find a way to try and get Ayton off the floor? Because if he does come off the floor, maybe we'll get a Frank Kaminsky game. Maybe. This is deep. And they may not even play Frank Kaminsky. But, yeah, he could get hot. He's just a different kind of player. He's your Kelly Olynyk out there, bombing threes as a big man, even though they went to Dario Saric first. So I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, what's Jokic going to do? He should come back and give it to Ayton, but Ayton, again, has been ridiculously solid. He's not pumping on those pumpers. He's not jumping in the air, so can't wait.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but did a Nuggets player let it slip that Will Barton might be returning?
Yeah,
for
someone
game
did.
Two? Yeah, who was that? I can't remember off the top of my head who said that, but
still
Will
doubtful,
Barton
right?
Or... could be back is what they're, yeah, they, people think that he sort of let it slip, though, that he might be back in the lineup. So we'll see. Game two, Nuggets, Suns. We'll be back tomorrow morning to break it all down. You can join us live at 10 a.m. Eastern here on YouTube. We'll turn it around as quick as humanly possible to get it up to your podcast feed. You can join us later today. Beach Steppin. You guys sent in your questions and your comments. Keep them coming. NoDunks@TheAthletic.com. Tweet them in @NoDunksInc. Live at 3 p.m. Eastern back on YouTube to answer some of your Qs, NBA questions, and non-NBA questions. Always a blast. So hopefully we'll see some of you here in the stream team at 3 p.m. Eastern. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, John Stamos likes the Beach Boys and Oikos yogurt.
Embrace the day, people.
You could stay.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.